Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation. I'm your host, Janet Jones, and you're listening to UK Health Radio. This programme brings you honest, gritty, emotional and inspiring conversation around a subject that affects all of us, yet is still very much taboo. So join me now for this inspiring Good Grief Conversation. Welcome to the Good Grief Conversation, and today is going to be slightly different. I don't only have one person to have a conversation with, but I have three. And that's because when I had a soul treatment with Catherine Carrigan, who was a guest in the Spiritual Help series, and if you haven't tuned into those yet, those are episodes 14 to 18. They are brilliant. I found them incredibly helpful on my journey, so I hope you do too. But what Catherine asked me to do was ask if I had the willingness to let go of grief. And this had a physical reaction to me, like a panic in a way. So I decided to ask three people about their thoughts on the willingness to let go of grief. And these are three parents who have lost children in the last few years. So it's all very fresh for them. And their response to my question was all very different. So sit back, enjoy these different points of view. You may have a completely different point of view yourself, but I always find that listening to other people's stories can bring healing and openness and change our lives in ways that we didn't know. So here are my guests, Dave, Ross, and Christine. Good morning, Dave. Thank you for joining me here on the Good Grief Conversation, where we're talking about the willingness to let go of grief. And you've had quite a substantial grief in your life. So if you could just tell me a little bit about that.
Janet, good morning. So in June 2017, my then 12-year-old son, Daniel, the youngest of three, for some bizarre reason, which we'll never understand, hanged himself in his bedroom. I found him up there sort of just shortly before 9 o'clock one evening and rushed to hospital, but didn't survive. The finding of the inquest after a very prolonged investigation was accidental death. There was nothing to indicate that he intended to take his own life. And it was a total bolt out of the blue for us. So, it was a relief that suicide wasn't the finding, but you know, the fact that it was accidental death is kind of been a bit of an unresolved thing for us. But it's kind of been a 3-year journey now of just trying to make sense of it and at the same time dealing with this massive emptiness in the middle of our lives. And this week is one of the times when it's brought home hard to us again, because we've seen photos on social media of his schoolmates turning 16 and going back to school and that sort of thing. So it's all these sort of landmarks that he'll never get to experience that we've found the hardest, really.
So with all that in mind, how, you know, I've been reading recently about the willingness to let go of the grief. And in one book in particular, it's called The Courage to Grieve. And so this has just come in my psyche. It was part of one of the conversations that I've also had recently. With that you've just said, how do you reach this willingness to let go of the grief? And how has that been for you, Dave?
That's a huge question. We attend a group called Healing Hearts, a wonderful charity called Rubens Retreat, and they've been looking after us just over 3 years now, since the summer that Dan died. And Healing Hearts is a group of parents who are more than a year into their lost journey, if you like. And we had a big discussion around side swipes, things that come out of the blue and knock you off course and make the grief sort of resurface, and you know how you deal with those, what makes them happen. And one of the things that I sat there listening to everybody talk about this, and it occurred to me that I don't get them. or very, very rarely get them. And it occurred to me that one of the reasons is that I'm proactive in making myself encounter the things that people were describing. So hearing a song that brings up a memory, or, you know, it comes on the car radio, where I have songs that are strongly associated with Daniel and his life on my Spotify, and I listen to them. It's almost like I've got a playlist that reminds me of him, and I listen to them and I embrace them. And I think in that way, I don't then get surprised by these things coming out of the blue, because I've gone out of my way proactively to find those. And it's the same with going through his memorabilia. We've got loads and loads of his memorabilia. And one of the things that I said was, you know, I've read every single condolence card that we received when he died. I've read every single entry in his book of condolence. I've looked through all the press clippings reporting his death and reporting the inquest. And, you know, some of that was hard. I proactively go out of my way to look for these things and encounter them on my own terms. And that was the key phrase, was that, you know, I meet these things on my own terms, and it doesn't come out of the blue and surprise me and knock me off course. How close that is to answering that question, I don't know. But it then got me thinking around how, in general, I kind of oscillate between several different poles in my handling of my grief. So I do still sometimes feel anger about it, about why it happened, about the injustice and the unfairness of it. Huge feeling of loss, as I said, especially at times like this, when he should have been going through these little key landmarks, starting year 11 at school, you know, his crucial year back in March, you know, his school rugby team playing in the Yorkshire Cup final, teammates of his being selected to play rugby for Yorkshire and that sort of thing. And you know, all these things that I think, well, he should have been doing that. He should have been there. And so there's that unfairness. There's that sort of wistfulness and grief about his unfulfilled potential, or his stolen future, if you like, the sort of the lost future, which has been the big thing really for me. So yeah, so the grief, anger, and then sort of happiness, just thinking about the kind of person he was, thinking about how lucky and privileged we were as parents to have had him in our life. It's almost, my wife said she always had this feeling, and she did give expression to this before Daniel died, but he always had this kind of feeling that he was on loan. And it's really strange. He's the only one of our children that I ever had nightmares about something bad happening to. The other two kids, nothing of that sort, but several times I had nightmares about something bad happening to Daniel, about him being terribly hurt or killed. You know, it was, so there's this feeling that he was on loan, that he was asked to look after for a while, and that was a huge privilege. So there's all these sorts of different emotions, and I bounce between them, sometimes all of those things in one day, or sometimes I'll have a week where maybe anger and frustration is the theme, or maybe happiness and joy is the theme. You know, I have these, it's a weird sort of bipolar existence.
What do you think of grief, you know, passing and having the willingness to let go of the grief? You know, you refer to it as my grief. What are your thoughts on the willingness to let go of that side of things?
Again, I'm kind of split between two poles, wanting to hold on to some elements of it, because like it or not, the experience and the grief that you experience as a result of that happening, they change you. They make you a different person. They change your outlook on things. There's certainly been some elements of my life where I've looked at things and gone, you know what, life's too short, because life is brutally short. We've had that horribly illustrated to us. And so I'm not saying that a lot less tolerant, but I'm a lot less willing to put up with other people's nonsense. I'm a lot less afraid to speak my mind for fear of offending somebody, because if they get offended with me, what's really the worst that could happen? The worst that could happen has already happened to me. So in some ways, that grief has been a positive thing, and it's something that those positive elements to it are things you would like to hold on to, and not say, I need to get over this grief now and move on. I don't think there is any moving on. You get on, you learn to deal with it, and you learn to keep it in its place. But at the same time, you need to acknowledge that it is always going to be there somewhere, and it is always going to bubble to the surface.
And I guess it's about using that, as you said, for the positive, because if it is always there, then there is always a reminder that life is short. What are you worrying about? What are you stressing about? And it's kind of the grief that reminds you of that. Maybe it's the dark side of grief that we want to kind of replace with that side of grief, and just say, it is there, but how now do I use that to benefit my higher, better self, rather than try and your willingness to get rid of it? I mean, this question, since reading this book, has really posed all kinds of thoughts for me. which is why I wanted to discuss it.
Sure. And it's a fascinating question. What sort of emotional beings are we? I mean, it kind of poses that almost an existential dilemma. Are we beings, are we spirits of sort of happiness and positivity, or are we spirits of misery and negativity? And
or are we spirits of truth? Because sometimes it is happy and sometimes it's dark. And if we are spirit of truth, then we'll embrace all of that.
Yeah, well, truths are, you know, sometimes pleasant and sometimes uncomfortable, you know, and that's part of life, that's part of being, isn't it? That things are sometimes bitter and sometimes sweet.
Or can we view them in a different way, that they are neither one or the other? And that's a much deeper question.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. And it's Saturday morning. Look what I've done already.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And I'd need to think about that a whole heap more.
And I will look into that further, actually, to see, as I'm on my journey, which is why I do the Good Grief Conversation. Maybe I'll find some Buddhist somewhere who can answer that and teach us how to do that. I don't know. And it could be something that is completely unachievable, or I have no idea. Or you get that when you're 90 or something.
Yeah. One of the things I have, I don't think learned, because I think it's something that I already knew, but one of the things that I have now accepted and had confirmed to me is that your grief is very personal, and there's no right or wrong way. Nobody writes a manual for this. Things like the death of your parents, you're kind of prepared for, because that's part of the natural order of things, you know. But nobody writes a manual for losing your 12-year-old in such a horrible, violent way. You know, I've been through... I mean, if we were having this conversation 2 years ago, it would be a very, very different conversation, because I was so, so angry. So angry. Unbelievable. And I'd had treatment for PTSD, and, you know, it's so, so raw. But I used to, in terms of not caring about things, and the life's too short thing was almost, it almost became self-destructive, because I really didn't care what happened to me. And so, you know, I would be in drink, for example, and have a minor disagreement with somebody, which would turn into me actively looking for that to become violent and pushing it, because I just wanted the pain and the destruction. And I didn't care whether it was me that suffered it or me that inflicted it. Either way was fine. I wanted the release of violence. And yeah, it was my counsellor who said, you're suffering quite badly from PTSD and you need to get it treated.
And so then, coming back to the willingness part, then, for you to get from that state of where you were, then there has to be a willingness to go, I need to move from that depth of the grief. So maybe it's a willingness to actually embrace grief as part of life, to go, it's okay, I'm here, I've got this, and I'm going to be okay with this.
Yeah, well, actually, the thing with that, and that made me seek out help for the PTSD, was having one of these incidents when I was with a friend, and we got out of the pub, and we sort of parted and I went home. I was very, very worse the worse for drink. And a couple of days later, he rang me up and said, you were absolutely out of control on Saturday. I was uncomfortable being with you, and you need help. And I said, I did the usual bravado thing of, you know, if people have a problem, it's their problem, it's not mine. I've been through much worse in my life than they've been through, and did it. You know, I've got no grounds to say that, because how do I know? And he just said, you know, well, look at the way you're behaving and the way you're treating people and the way that you're not handling your drink. And he said, would Daniel be proud of you?
It's a big one.
Well, yeah. And the answer, thinking about it, was no, he wouldn't. He would tell me to stop being such an idiot. And at that point, that then became a question that I asked myself, is would Daniel approve? Would Daniel be good with this? Or is this something he wouldn't like? And I get it wrong. I do get it wrong. I say the wrong thing. I've always had a propensity for putting my foot in my mouth, especially when you're as fond of the sound of your own voice as I am. It's very, very easy to go on too long and say the wrong thing. I now feel that, you know, this is a question I can ask myself, is would Dan approve of this? And it's quite a good guide. Because if the answer's no, then don't do it.
Then don't do it. That's great. Dave, I'm going to have to end this conversation here, because I've got other conversations to go and extend this question. It's been fascinating to talk to you this morning, and I really appreciate that.
That's absolutely my pleasure, Janet. It's lovely to see you again. I'm glad to see you looking so good.
Yes, you too.
Take care, Janet.
Thanks very much. You have a great Saturday. Hi, Ross.
Hi, Janet.
Thank you so much for sparing some of your Saturday morning for me as we try and investigate this willingness to let go of grief. And I know you've got some interesting thoughts on this. So I'd love to have a chat. But before we do that, just send me a little bit of your background and what happened to you and where your grief is showing up.
Right. So we're coming up to the 1 year anniversary. Yeah, it was the 20th of September last year. My 21-year-old son, God knows why, how, but he was standing on the slipway of the motorway in Manchester, hitching at 1:30 or 1 o'clock in the morning, and obviously got hit, and we think died instantly. Yeah, so lots of questions about why he was there. I think he was just drunk and disorientated, but yeah, anyway, I mean, in that sense, it was a straightforward thing that there was no one else to blame. He was a happy boy, man, by then. So in that sense, it seems that I know people have a lot harder to deal with if it's a child or suicide. I mean, God, obviously, since this has happened, we've become very, very aware of what people go through. And actually, ours is very straightforward. And the bottom line is we just really miss him. But coming back to your question, this was something that struck me very, very early on, is how much choice we have in how we deal with these things. And I remember quite early days just crying and thinking, I don't want to feel like this. And then just thinking, okay, we'll stop then. And it sounds very simplistic, but basically I knew I had a choice. I could go down with the ship, or I could choose to sort of let go. And letting go, well, I don't feel this, but I can see how it might feel like you're being disloyal to the person you love, that you're not kind of grieving all the time. And, you know, he's in my thoughts. Anytime there's a gap, he's there. You know, that presumably will, I don't know if that will ease. It's not a bad thing. He's just there. He's just constantly in my thoughts. But the idea, I've got two other sons, and the idea that they would be carrying the burden of my grief, you know, I was not going to have that. I just wasn't going to have that. I wasn't going to ruin their lives. They'd lost their brother. You know, I wasn't going to make this an unhappy place for them to be. So all of those things kind of conspired to make me feel, and all the stuff that I've always read, all the kind of Buddhist-y stuff about letting go, being in the moment, all of that came into very, very sharp focus and made perfect sense. It all just made perfect sense. The past's gone, the future, God, we all know we've no idea what's around the corner. So all we have is the present. And to find the joy in the present is just seems to be honouring his life, actually, as well as anything else.
That's kind of where I feel I've come. It's like, you know, to hold on to grief as a pain, then I don't think you are honouring the person who has passed on, because they're not able to live, whether either in pain or in joy. And like you say, you know, we do have choices. I do understand when you're in that moment of darkness and pain, it's hard to make the choice. Now, I know you've had a lot of Buddhist training before all of this happened.
Not really. I mean, they really haven't. I mean, it's just been a very kind of on the surface interest. I've never delved into it in the slightest. It's just, you know, I had an interest in the sort of philosophy of it. It really resonated and just made perfect sense. And the things that I never quite got, like non-attachment, I thought, oh, that sounds very cold. But I totally get it now. It is about, somebody said you should hold it together, as in not go hysterical. And I said, it's not about that, because then you're kind of pulling it all in. The point is to let it go. Yeah. And it does work as a, also the thing that I know that would have devastated him more than anything is to have upset us. You know, I know he would have been heartbroken at the thought that he had ruined our lives. So there's another kind of aspect of it there. It's like, this is for him as much as for me. And it's very, very much for me. I'm not trying to make out that, you know, it kind of has worked. And I still have days where I just feel very heavy hearted and I accept them and kind of work with them. And then something else will happen and I can come out of it. And it's just an ongoing thing, isn't it? But like I say, he's always present in my mind. So it's not a letting go of him as a memory, but it's a letting go of the grief. I'm trying to live with him as a positive in my head rather than live with a tragedy. Even the word tragedy, I struggle to use, and a lot of people have used it. And I think because his life was happy, I think the tragedy is in the living rather than the dying. And I say that as somebody who, like I say, it was very straightforward. It was clean cut. He died straight away. And this is not to diminish anybody else's journey, for want of a better word. You know, anyway, So that's kind of where I am.
And it's interesting. And that is the thing with grief and loss, is that people's journeys are very individual. And these are really, we're sharing ideas and experiences in order to help, and maybe a penny drop for somebody. You were talking about, you know, the non-attachment. And I know Buddhism is very much about non-attachment. I find, anyway, it's very difficult to detach from my son. But what is it that we are detaching from, though?
It's not about detaching from your son. To my mind, it's not that at all. It is detaching from the things that cause us pain in that respect. You know, so anytime you have that feeling where, and I've had it, you know, not just about Jonah. I've had it about, you know, when those days when you're just feeling really grumpy and there's no real reason for it. And if you're kind of conscious of it, I just think, I don't need to do this. I don't need to feel like this. And you can actually quite consciously let it go and think, okay. And that's what I read it as, and especially now, that idea that you don't have to hold on to all these things that harm us, really. And actually, this has been a huge, huge learning curve for both of us. And we both said that we think we are better people for it. God, we wish it hadn't happened. But, you know, we have learned enormously from it in that respect. And what is important is kindness and loving the people that are around you, you know. And I think that's pretty much the bottom line.
So do you feel you love more consciously now?
Yes. I think I was always aware of how lucky I was with my sons. And I don't think I took that for granted. I probably did at times, but I just feel very, very lucky to, A, have known him and loved him and had him in my life. I wouldn't have taken that away for all the pain that it's caused. I wouldn't have traded that. It's made me very appreciative of what I have had. Like we're saying about the Lucy Home book, how that was, we read that very early days. And that just resonated so much about how, you know, gratitude can really help. Really does make a difference, you know, if you can see what you've still got. And again, this is about being in the present. And again, I'm speaking from a very privileged position because, you know, if you've lost an only child, and it's going to be a different thing. But though I was talking to my friend the other day, who's one of her friends lost her only child about 15 years ago, she just said, well, the worst that could happen has happened. She felt it kind of freed her up in life as well, because it's like, you know that you can survive something really awful. One thing David said was he thought before Jonah died, he would have thought that if you'd lost a child, it would make you really overprotective about the others. But he said it's actually done the opposite. And I feel the same. They're both rugby players. They're both in precarious professions. But I think it makes me feel you've got to just live, you know, and risk is part of life. And if you don't take risks, then you're not fully living. So it's interesting. It's made us kind of go the other way in a way. You know, you see people in Syria that have lost their 6 children, or there's a perspective that you can get from looking at other people's stories as well.
Yes, there is. But I guess it's about, we can survive by just keep getting up in the morning. Our body continues to function. For me, it's about how do you live, not survive.
Thriving. It's about thriving.
Yes,
isn't it?
I think so. And that is where I think there's a major challenge, and where a separate action needs to be taken, and there are things to do. It's almost like that kind of becomes a job or becomes the purpose then. Like you said, Jonah doesn't want your family to be unhappy. Do you also think that by having that philosophy of, you know, non-attachment and living in the moment, this is a big question. Do you think that allows Jonah to come into your life and share your life?
That's a lovely thought.
You're welcome. I've been able to give you something, Ross.
I hadn't actually framed it in that way. But yes, I suppose if I can think of him in a joyful way rather than chest beating way, then I suppose it does allow more space for him. Yeah, no, I like that. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, brilliant. Oh, that's a really beautiful way of looking at all this. I see so many people suffering, and obviously I go through my waves, my personal waves, but there are Facebook groups out there that just seem to be all suffering, you know, not my Facebook group, of course.
No, I know. And I really appreciate your group for that, because, you know, it is a different slant on it. Because, again, early days, we had looked at things and it was like, yeah, my son died 15 years ago and every day is like the first. And it's like, don't.
It can't be.
It can't be. And also give people hope. You know, give people hope that there is a life at the end of this, you know, that there is a way to accommodate it and live with it.
And happily with it, you know, to bring joy.
Happily with it, rather than being crushed by it, side by side with it. You know, it's a life-changing thing. But if it can be a positive life-changing thing, and obviously I'm saying this to you, you understand where I'm coming from. It's not always an easy thing to voice to people that haven't lost a child. But yeah, you've got to. Otherwise, it's, you know, if you can't learn from things that happen to you in your life, then, you know, what's the point, really?
And also, it's kind of a waste of our children's life, too. And if we can embrace that, then for me, I just see that if we can embrace it and live, then they get to live too. Whereas if we die, if our spirit dies, I don't know anything about this. This is just a pure feeling that I have from my life experience. I have no kind of, you know, conscious knowledge. I'm not a spiritual healer or but something in my psyche says that's the truth.
Yeah. But you can live it. You can live it in a daily way. Like I say, in small things. Those, you can let go of those kind of days where, and, you know, grief aside, you can let go of the things that are making you unhappy a lot of the time. And the bottom line is we have no control over what happens to us in life. Well, some, but probably very little. But we do have control over how we deal with it. And that's the bottom line with all of this. It's like, it's the only agency we've got.
And I guess with the letting go, it's not so much letting go and feeling cross with yourself that you've even got yourself in that position. It's kind of letting go with love. It's like, I feel you, I get you, but I don't need you today. But whereas sometimes you go, oh, I just wish this would go away. Well, then you bring in an anger and a frustration to it, I guess.
And also a sense that you've got nothing to do with it. And I think you probably have, you know. And I think if you can exercise that control.
It's a horrible word, I know.
I don't mean control as in controlling your emotions. I mean, there's times when I feel, you know, you just kind of, okay, bring it. You know, I'm going to have one of those.
Yeah, and you want to scream, you know.
Yeah, it might be half an hour. But I don't think I don't carry it all day now. You know, I can have moments and I can have moments of listening in desperately and I'll cry and then I can come out of it, you know. It's not about suppressing that in the slightest, but it's just understanding that that's a wave, and you know, you ride it and then you get on with your day,
and then it's a deep breath and back up. I think that's a really important point to make, actually, because this does come in waves, and rather than think, oh, I'm not supposed to, I don't want to feel this pain, and push the pain away,
none of that, it's all that,
yeah, and so allow it to come through and then pass on. Don't let the wave take you down, just let it pass through and away it goes, and then come back up for air and take a bigger breath of oxygen
and look around you know, I mean, it's been a weird year for everybody, you know.
And even in this crazy COVID situation, which could easily take people down, it's just, again, just keep going, right, well, COVID is over there, but there's so much more over here, and just trying to maintain a balance. Beautiful. Thank you so much, Ross. That was a lovely snippet of a conversation.
No, it's been a pleasure.
You take care, Ross. I'll speak to you soon. And I look forward to more of your positive comments in the Facebook group.
You too.
Take care, Ross. Bye now.
Bye now.
Hi, Christine.
Hello,
thank
Jenna.
You. Hi. Thank you for joining me on the Good Grief Conversation. I've been asking people to give their thoughts on the willingness to let go of grief. This was something that happened to me just recently, and it sent my little mind thinking about what other people thought. So just tell me a little bit about your background first of why I've invited you here on the Good Grief Conversation.
Okay. Well, it's because I've lost a child, an adult child. Our daughter Emma became ill when she was 21, sitting her university finals. It turned out to be a very little known illness called mitochondrial disease. And very sadly, 7 years on, when she was 28, Emma quite unexpectedly actually died. She was in fact abroad on holiday and died in Turkey. So that was 3 years ago coming up.
So that's been, you're 3 years in this horrible place that we find ourselves in. So during that time, what are your thoughts on, you know, being willing to let go of grief? Because I'm discovering not everybody is willing to let go of this.
No, I think it's a difficult question because it depends on your understanding of what grief is. But two main thoughts on it. The first one is in the early days, I'd say probably, and I'm sure it's different for everyone, but perhaps in the first 6 months, 12 months, when you grieve, perhaps when the trauma's lifted a little, then there is an almost fear of letting go of grief because it feels like it's your main connection to your child.
Yeah.
And I remember very strongly having that fear and awareness that I was willing to let it go, but a fear of doing so. And luckily, I knew a lady who had lost a child who heard that fear, who I could talk very openly about it to. And she assured me, she helped me to reframe the idea that the grief was shrinking or would shrink. She helped me see that actually it's not like that. It's now seen that your life grows around it and expands around it. And your grief actually stays the same, if you want to imagine it as a little ball of grief. And it's safe and in your heart and ready to revisit whenever you feel the need.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have to be your whole life anymore. And it doesn't mean it's getting smaller. And it doesn't mean that you lose the connection with your child. And in fact, you find different ways to connect with your child.
Yes.
And then those continuing bonds, whatever you want to call them, become the way that you feel connected and you don't perhaps feel the need for the grief anymore.
And did you feel sort of slightly guilty? The reason why I ask that is I did a coaching session with somebody recently, and this is where this question was prompted.
Yeah.
And she wanted me to say, I am willing to let go of the grief.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, I teared up, my throat went, my heart started racing. And it was at that point I just thought, okay, I need to look more closely to this.
Again, I think the second thing is I'm not sure I do want to let go of the grief, depending on what you understand by grief. And I've come to an understanding in my mind, how I think of it is there's two aspects to grief. There's pain and there's suffering. I'm not willing to let go of the pain because the pain of Emma not being physically in my life anymore will always be here. And that's almost a therapeutic pain, if you like. When I do sit with it, I come through eventually and feel soothed and that it was the right thing to do to sit with that pain. Suffering, I am willing to let go. And suffering to me is what comes with when we add a narrative to that pain, when we say, she should be here. It would have been a birthday. She would have been doing this. What if we'd have done this differently? All those questions are a road to madness, I feel, because there are no answers. You know, why her? Why us? All those thoughts I very quickly learned were not constructive. They didn't serve me.
Yeah.
They certainly didn't serve Emma. And I was very willing to let those thoughts go because they produced suffering. But the pain of her loss, the fact she's not here anymore physically, I think will always
it's
be with
always
me.
Going to be there, isn't
and I don't have a problem with that.
Yes.
So I'm willing to let go of the suffering.
That makes perfect sense,
not
because it's the suffering that makes life feel heavy and exhausting.
Yes, and it's also within your control to a large point. If you have an awareness of what you put through your mind, you know, it's very easy, I think, to dwell on, you know, the horrible times of funeral planning or the funeral itself or the actual death. It's very easy to, and if you have obviously something like PTSD, you're kind of bound there and you need perhaps professional help to sort that. But even without PTSD, it's very easy to dwell on all the difficult aspects. And, you know, I learnt very quickly, it's very pointless. It is what it is. Emma has died. It took me a while to even say the word died.
Well,
I think that's
too.
Very common. You know, use the word death and, you know, still people use the word past. And that's fine. It's
and
a softer version.
I was going to say, I understand that. And I... Because I think death we see as the end.
Very funny.
And so I now don't actually use the word death, but not because I don't like it for whatever reason. I do say that he's passed because he's still here.
Absolutely.
My
more
belief is that.
I think.
Yes. So I think, you know, he has passed.
Mm-hmm.
It's his body that's
gone.
It's a transition. It's my belief. And for me, that helps me to handle this whole thing.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah.
That's a better word in many respects. But I think some bereaved parents talk about the D word, and I do think that there's a level at which a level of acceptance is a good thing, and avoiding the fact that they've died altogether, it again, it's just one of those areas that doesn't serve you.
I know. I mean, in the early days, as you know, there's a lot of denial around it anyway, because you just can't believe it. Your brain isn't computing it.
No, I can still get that now. I was chatting to some fellow brave parents last night on a Zoom call, and you just get that just slight instant of why am I even here? What, just bizarre, but very true. Even though that absolutely you know why you're there, and you know you are a bereaved parent, you still can't really take it on board. It's so surreal.
You get a sharp intake of breath, don't you? I find I can be driving along sometimes and go, oh my God, that is real.
Yes. It's surreal. It continues to be surreal. Not as much, but
And we don't know how long that bit's going to go on.
That's right.
But I do think, like you said, the control that we have over choosing whether to suffer or not is huge. And I think that's really eye-opening as well, to know that, you know, I can choose this. And I think it's the same with any pain, isn't it? I can choose to suffer with this pain, or I can choose to accept the pain, whether it's a physical pain or an emotional pain.
And I think the other thing is to sit with it, and people talk about leaning into it. It's different for different people how they describe it, but I do think you have to sit with it to process it. And that if you avoid it, it only just taps you on the shoulder down the line. And it's about sitting with it and feeling the emotion, which is not something we're necessarily taught to do in life.
No, we're not. We're taught to avoid pain, aren't we? Avoid pain at all costs.
But I don't know if you're aware of Brené Brown, but she talks about, she's like the vulnerability expert. And she talks about that we often, because we don't want to feel shame or any other negative emotion, we dull our emotions down, and you can't dull one down without dulling them all. You can't be selective.
No.
And I really do feel that my grief for Emma, I mean, there's no way you can not feel big time that emotion, the love and loss of a child. So I feel like that cracked my emotions open. I think I definitely had dulled them down along the way. And the gift of that is that I can now feel amazing happiness in a way that I wasn't able to before. And yes, it has grief alongside, because but feelings aren't mutually exclusive.
You just said something that you blow me away. I'd never realised that, you know, by being cracked open, you could also, because you can feel greater pain, you can feel greater happiness.
I think so. And of course, it's tempered by the fact, the other thing I learned big and strong is emotions aren't mutually exclusive. You know, you don't just feel happy or sad, or you can actually feel them both at the same time. And that was a big lesson. So some massive life lessons that I like to think as gifts from Emma. You know, that's another connection to her.
Yeah, and it's nice to see them as gifts, isn't it? Because you've got them. And so it's like, well, embrace this.
Embrace it. The bad's happened. I know some parents that would feel very guilty that anything good would happen as a result of the child's death. But I feel that the death's happened, the bad's happened.
Yeah.
Do we want good from it? Do we want bad from it? Well, certainly I'm up for as much good as possible to
absolutely
come from.
And also, I think that allows our children to continue living
big
through
time.
Us. Whereas when we shut that down and refuse to be happy because of what's happened, then we're not allowing the flow of our children to come through and continue living.
And I feel I can't honour Emma's life by not honouring my own.
Wow, this is really powerful. I like that. Christine, we're out of time, but that's fantastic.
Well, thank you. It's been fabulous.
I hope you will come back and join me and we'll do a longer conversation. That would be great.
Would love to.
Thank you very much, Christine.
Well, thank you.
Well, that was fascinating. I thoroughly enjoyed all of those conversations. They were short and sweet, but we got to the point and people really shared what their true thoughts were, from leaning into the pain, gratitude, and actually living with the grief, but watching your life grow around the grief. I hope that there was something in there for you. Maybe it's too soon if you're in a really dark place with the loss, but just know that there is bright times to come, and that all these conversations and people's thoughts that they're sharing can blend with yours and can help you too. So until next week, where we have more amazing guests with great conversations, I hope that you're enjoying these. And also, if you haven't tuned into the Spiritual Help series, then just go to www.spiritualhelp.com thegoodgriefconversation.com, and if you do listen now, you'll be able to select episodes 14 to 18, and there's lots of great information, very thought-provoking stuff going on in there. And also, my guests gave me gifts for you, so you can retrieve those at the podcast extras. Again, go to www.thegoodgriefconversation.com and then just click on the podcast extras button. So until next week, I'm your host Janet Jones, and you have been listening to UK Health Radio. I can't wait to speak to you very soon. You have a great week. Bye for now.